Now we're in 2008, where you are working towards your first Olympic Games. Yeah. But, you know, in that particular year for yourself, I know as well as training for the Olympics, you were also dealing with, you know, loss and grief of your father. And, you know, that's something that I've also gone through, haven't gone through it myself in 2012. So how did you manage it? Because, you know, I didn't know until afterwards as well when we were out in Beijing. Because, you know, how was it making the team? Having to deal with that, because, you know, the Olympic trials is the absolute worst. Because, as you know yourself, it's do or die, you know. So, yeah, how was that year for you?
Really tough. It's funny because, like, we're really private families. Just, like, I always laugh and say it was really idyllic. Like, my mum's dream in life was to get married and to have a boy and a girl and call them Andrew and Jennifer. And, like, that was her dream. And, like, I'm like, you know what? Everyone's got different dreams in life. My mum achieved hers, which was awesome. And, yeah, in 2008, it was one of those things where my dad had actually had cancer 2 years earlier, but never told anyone other than my mum. So they dealt with that on their own. And they must be good actors and actresses because I don't remember anything about it. So I literally remember in 2008 coming back from warm weather training, and I lived away from my parents then. I'd moved out of the family home. And I remember just coming to the house unexpected. They weren't expecting me. And I remember walking in and my dad was like quite ill. And I was like, what's going on here? Dad's never ill. And then they'd say that dreadful C word, you know, and I was like, what? You've got cancer? And they were like, we've got over it before. It'll probably be okay. And it just happened all so quickly. So 6 weeks later, that was it. He wasn't here anymore. And it's one of those things. I think you either fold or you just dig deep. I remember I had this terrible training session to do the day after it was scheduled. So that was on the Monday. And I remember already on the Monday being nervous about a training session that I had on the Tuesday. It's like a split 800. So you always run as fast as you can on the 500. Well, I'd probably say like 95%, but you know 500 hurts, you know what I mean?
You're going to die anyway.
Yeah. And then a really short recovery, maybe 90 seconds and a 300, whatever you've got left. And I remember literally thinking, oh God, I've got that session tomorrow. Because an athlete just thinks that way, don't they? And I was actually doing, it was still the Golden League then. I was doing my first Golden League that weekend. And I remember ringing my agent up, Caroline, and telling her, you know, Dad's passed away. And she's like, oh, don't worry about it. I'll sort it out. It was the Bislett Games. I'll sort it out. Cancel you. And I was like, I'm not cancelling. I need to do this race. And she's like, oh God, will you be able to do it? And actually, athletics was so important to me at that time because it was my normality. And whilst everybody else kind of was breaking down around me, I just focused on that. And it just helped everybody else out, mm-hmm. you know. And I thought, if I can just make everyone smile for a short period of time, watch me on TV, I do well in a race, it'll make them all forget it for half an hour. So I did. I remember doing really well on this training session. And again, I remember Trevor, my husband coach, just thinking, gosh, that was a good training session, as if you've just managed to do that. I actually remember on the day, on the Monday, that UK anti-doping came to my house to test me. And I literally remember Trevor going to the door saying, oh gosh, this is like the worst time. Like, Jen's dad's literally just passed away like 2 or 3 hours ago. And it was the same tester who always used to come. So I had a really good relationship with her. And I could hear from the other room her saying, oh gosh, really sorry. Oh, but I don't know what we're going to do because there's lots of form filling in. You know, you're going to have to kind of give a testament to explain things. We'll need a certificate, the, you know, kind of copy of the death certificate. And I just came out and I was like, oh, I know you're gonna be mortified, Jane. Like, I'm mortified too, but we're just gonna have to do this. So, you know, this is what athletics is about, isn't it? Even for 2 hours on that day when you're trying to grieve or whatever, like, still got responsibilities. But yeah, I literally went to that Golden League at the weekend and ran really well. The Olympic qualifying time was 2 minutes and I ran a 1:59 something. You know, I think that was my second, oh no, that was my first Olympic qualifier of the year, that year. I really remember Tamsin Lewis, Tamsin Manu course, now, Australian athlete. Mm-hmm. And I know Tamsin really well since I retired as well. I used to compete against her, obviously, but I think I must have gone for a cool down and Trevor was talking to her. And when I came back, she was like, oh my God, how did you do that? Trevor's just told me like the whole situation. But I ended up having this run of about 3 weeks where I think I just ran on adrenaline. I won the European Cup. I got another qualifying time somewhere. And then eventually I just ended up full on kind of cold and flu symptoms, absolutely drained, wiped out. But, you know, I'd qualified for the Olympics. So, you know, I got the time a couple of times and obviously managed to go to Beijing. And, you know, that had been my dream for 20 years since I was 7, 8, managed to do it. But the only bad thing was, of course, that my dad wasn't able to be, to kind of be there and do it. But I think you find out a lot about yourself at times like this. You know, you can either just sit there and kind of crumble or you can use it. And for me, significantly after that Olympics, you know, I went to the Olympics, made the semi-final. That's kind of what I was supposed to do. But I really, really remember that winter, I kind of had a moment where I was like, okay, so I've been to Olympics, I've dealt with all of this stuff. Am I going to actually try and win something now? You know, it was a real turning point for me. And I used to get nervous before races. And then my whole mindset changed. And I was like, look, it's just a race. It's just an 800 meters. I'm running twice around a track. It's nothing in relation to life and death. Like, come on. And I just think I had a real mental switch and thankfully never looked back the rest of my career after that.
So in that moment, you know, just listening to you there, just talk about it, it just sounds like you were saved by the sport. It saved you.
Yeah, and, you absolutely.
Know, that, and when you also mentioned about, you know, being drug tested the day of, you know, your father passing away.
You make commitments for sport, but...
That's a liberty for the start. But you know what I realised as well? Again, like I said, haven't gone through a similar experience. You know, as athletes, we get hurt and we have an injury. We have some type of medical support. But what is the protocol when you're going through grief?
Yeah.
When there's a loss of a parent or a loved one, especially when it's a big year.
Yeah.
I'm listening to you now and I'm like, you know what? Everything that you said, I pretty much went through myself. Yeah. Like, you go through a moment where you're just running, and I was running for my dad, and then right before the Olympics, I got sick. I got sick the weekend of trials. I made the team. But then in the next couple of weeks prior, I was just getting ill and I was sick. And it was because I never took care of myself. And then you think, oh, don't worry, I'll be fine. I'll be fine. It's the Olympics. Like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. And then, you know, you're not really looking after yourself physically, let alone mentally. It's just, you know, I just wish, you know, hopefully moving forward that there is or there will be something in place to deal with grief.
And do you know what? I think it's good when we speak about these things, you know. You know, I'm actually glad that you asked me, because sometimes people would skirt over that, you know, and I know, Jenny. I know. But I've been guilty of that as well. Like, when I go in schools talking about, you know, my athletics career, I think, oh God, do I tell the kids about that experience or not? You know, like...
But that was part of your journey.
Yeah, and I think, will they be upset? Or will they, like, you know, look at me in a certain way? But I literally remember Louise Hazel, obviously the heptathlete, she lost her father the same year. And she came up to me and she said, oh, and she told me the tale. I said, oh gosh, I'm so sorry, I didn't know. And she was like, but you know what? I heard about you and I saw you win the Europa Cup. She's, and I'd like been sat at home for 3 months crying, hardly trained. And then when I looked and I heard about you, she was like, Ryan, you just need to get up and sort it out now. So I think talking's a huge thing. And sometimes you think only yourself is kind of going through an experience, but there's always people going through those sorts of things.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully, you know, we can talk about these things, because injury is one thing and dealing with, you know, different sorts of mental health issues within a sport. But you're still human at the end of the day.
You still go
through all of these emotions.
Yeah.
And, you know, you seem to have dealt with it really, really well, considering the next year was your breakthrough year.
It was. It set me up nicely.
It did. It did. So tell us about 2009, because I was definitely like, I was team Jenny from, no, I was always team Jenny anyway, but just to watch you and obviously know everything that you'd gone through up until that point.
I think it was just a huge mindset shift. So, you know, I think I'd always been kind of, sometimes I'd shown some really good signs in training. And probably quite frustrating, especially for Trevor, when I turn up for a race and he'd just think, oh, I know she can probably run faster than that if she's at Robin Park in Wigan in lane one on her own. But it's a big thing, you know. It goes back to that English schools, you know, my first experience, where you know, you've got a big crowd and you've got expectations and you've got the media and, you know you've trained hard, etc. And it might sound strange, but you've got to be really brave just to give it your all. And I think I'd always been like almost scared to commit, admit how hard I trained, how much I sacrificed, and be scared of coming up short. So sometimes maybe I would just make myself come up short myself, and it's under my control. But that year, I remember doing the European indoors and I finished fourth, and I ran a really, really quick time in the semi-final, and then it was a tactical final. And I remember coming away, it was a Sunday night, it was in Italy, and I remember thinking, oh, training's on Tuesday, I'll be doing a hard session. And I thought, you know what, I could keep doing all these hard sessions and I'm going to do brilliant in training, but I need to sort my head out. Like, why am I not doing it in a competition? So it was a huge kind of, you know, switch of my mind. And then I started working with Sarah Broadhead, who's a sports psychologist, who was just amazing. So she followed Steve Peters's chimp model.
Yeah.
And I'd worked with sports psychologists before, you know, some great sports psychologists, people, you know, employed or recommended by the British Olympic Association, etc. And, you know, I just think they didn't give me the real understanding and probably the tools to deal with things. So yeah, I know my heart's going to get elevated. I know my palms are going to be sweaty and, you know, things like that. But just explain why, let me find the reasons and the warning signs and let me manage it. So as soon as I spoke to Sarah, she said, oh, you know, you're gonna have to put a lot of work into it. But I was at the point in my career where I was like, well, I need to, because this is the final piece of the jigsaw for me, but it's massive. And yeah, from working with Sarah, literally she'd explained, you know, it's gonna take 12 to 24 months, you know, 1 to 2 years before you get these girls. I just bought into it so much that 4 or 5 months later, I had that world champs medal in my hand because I knew I needed to take it seriously. So she just really helped me understand how the brain works. And I'm quite, people don't realize this because I think I play it quite well, but I'm quite a feisty person.
No, really, Jennifer?
Oh, really? You know? Okay. So I am really feisty and everyone's always like, oh, you're really controlled. But yeah, if people know me well, like yourself, I am really feisty, so I am quite emotional, and if I get a piece of information, I react that way quite a lot. And even though externally my body language might not show it, inside my head it can be analyzing things, it can have emotion, it can switch off straight away if someone delivers a certain piece of information to me a certain way, or I kind of comprehend it that way. So just understanding why I do things and how I react just really just made, I almost started laughing at myself. Oh God, I do that. Oh God, yeah, I do that. I do that. And little things like Trevor would say to me before I went into the call room before a race, one of his things he used to say to me is, okay, kid, stay out of trouble, which seems like a throwaway comment. But when you're, you know, just about to almost, as I perceived it, go into battle, he's telling me to keep, okay, kid. So straight away, my brain's thinking, oh, I'm young, I can't cope with this, I've not got the coping skills, and stay out of trouble. You know, I'd be like, trouble? Is there going to be trouble? So straight away, I was almost on the back foot, and just a little throwaway comment where he thinks he's saying the right thing to me. So we just really worked with my team about what language they speak to me, how to say things. I worked on lots of different tasks. So I just made the 800 meters so simple. So I used to have conversations with Trevor. Oh, if it's a fast race, what are my tactics? If it's a tactical race, what are my tactics? And then I realized, you know what? I'm in the race too. So what's the best way for me to run it? And in the end,
how do I become a threat to everyone else?
What's the best way for me to run this 800 meters? And I remember talking to Sarah, and I came off after a race, and she said, tell me about the race. And I would tell her all this information. Well, such a body went off, and such a body was in my lane, and then such a body did this, and such a body. And when I came to the end of it, she was like, wow, that's a lot of information to process in less than 2 minutes. So I just didn't process any information in the end. I almost had a computer program in my head. I had 8 words, one for every 100 meters. And no matter what was going on around me, I'm going to say these 8 words. I'm going to action these 8 words. And it was the simplest. It's like, it was like I'd been an actress on a stage and I hadn't learned the words. I'd got no script. So I was going to races with a script and I just did my 8 words, which corresponded to an action, and just became a lot better runner. And, you know, nothing to do with anything physical. I did in the gym or on the track or on the hills or my long runs or anything like that. It was just getting my brain in gear. I just had a cute computer program that I just pressed go, ran it, and just almost tried to become non-emotional and just do my 8 words regardless of what everybody else is doing. And I'd walk off the track going, that's the easiest thing ever. Like, why have I not been doing this before? It's so simple. But that was the key for the rest of my career, really.
And with using those 8 words and everything that you'd learned working with Sarah and having your whole team set up around you, you did then go on to become a world bronze medalist in the 800 finally. So what was that like in that moment? Would you say that was like your most perfect race?
Yeah, that if I could only have one moment in the sport, that was it. Like, I literally could remember going to bed that night. I think I slept for about 45 minutes. Like, I just kept replaying the race. Wasn't a perfect race in the sense of I ran wide, very wide, a lot of the time. I do like a fast race, like a true run race from the beginning. And it was a race where, it just went off fast from the beginning. And I appreciate that. Janeth Jepkosgei from Kenya, you know, just took it out. She was the reigning world champion. And I'd actually beat her in the semi-final. And almost put her out of the final to make that final. In fact, all three medalists, Cassis Amanya, Jepkosgei and myself, were in the same semi-final. It was the semi-final of death. It was ridiculous. So Jepkosgei took it out, then Cassis Amanya, you know, took over. And I remember, like, we'd specifically worked out physiologically which was the best way for me to run. So we'd had a discussion about that race. Obviously, I'm doing my 8 words, but we hoped it would be fast, but if it wasn't fast, I knew where to position myself. So I didn't want to lead it because, you know, kind of experience tells me if someone leads a race, you don't generally go on to win it unless you're significantly better than the rest. So I would have put myself up there, like on second place if I needed to. But the way the race went, I was in seventh at the bell, and we'd practiced, you know, the optimum way for me to run is to get through that first 400 in about 57.5. I didn't know it at the time, but when I got my chip back, I was 57.49.
Oh, wow, so okay.
I think
Come on, targets.
I know. I think, you know, it wasn't a fluke. In my head, even though I'm doing my 8 words, of course you get some emotions that enter your head. So I was like, oh my God, I'm at the back, it's too fast, etc. And then I recognize it as emotion, shut it down, use my word. But I really, you know, I can run 52 seconds. So there's no way I needed to be in seventh, but I just knew, no, this feels like the right pace. Keep going, believe in yourself. They've got to come back to you. Come on, if they're going through in 56, they've got to come back to you at some point. And I remember the Italian girl kind of checked me a little bit at the bell. And I remember thinking, oh, this is it now. I've lost my opportunity. And then I remember with 300 to go, literally just cutting up the script, just going, just make the best of a bad situation. Just try and pick off as many as you can now. And then it's a nice feeling when you're picking people off, you know, instead of going backwards. It's the best feeling ever. And I just remember running the last bend, like, so wide. I was in the outside of lane 2, maybe even beginning of lane 3, because I just thought, I need to run wide, because if I wait to the straight, they're gone. So, yeah, it was amazing. Like, on the line, I knew I had a medal. I thought it was the bronze. Like, I was really close to the silver. I think I was only 200 behind Jepkosgei. And I actually think to myself, if I only run 800 meters, not about 812 or whatever I ran, you know, it would have been obviously a clear silver. But no, that was one of those moments where you pinch yourself and you think to yourself, wow, like, I did it. You know, I've watched athletes on TV for years win a medal, and all of a sudden I'm up on that, you know, on that victory lap. And I'm like, you know what? It does just happen to normal people. You know, if you just keep plugging away, you know, it does happen eventually. And I just think the main thing was just, like, so proud, you know, like, I believed I could do it, but believing it and doing it, it's like a completely different thing.
Thank you for listening to a preview of today's show. To hear the full episode, visit www.thehiddengreatness.com. Chicken.